Welcome to Film Fragments, a podcast where we take fragments of an actor, director, and genre and tell you our favorites from their catalog. My name is Brian Suffield. I'm your host, and today we're going to be talking about our favorite films directed by Oscar nominee Richard Linklater. Richard Linklater, my God, what can you say about this guy that hasn't been said already? One of the best voices out there, for sure. One of the best filmmakers working today. A guy who has been making films for nearly four decades at this point. He has tackled so many different genres. He loves tackling the theme of time. That is something that is going to be mentioned heavily throughout this discussion. I'm super excited to be telling you guys today my favorite films directed by Richard Linklater, but I'm also excited to welcome today's guest. Our guest today is Sarah Williams, a film reviewer and YouTuber, writer at Coastal House Media, member of the Film Critics Association UK. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me, Brian.
I'm super excited to have you on today. I cannot wait to delve into the career of Richard Linklater with you. But before we get into talking about Richard Linklater, I would just love to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself, talk about what you do, what got you into film, and why you love it so much.
Okay, so as Brian said, my name is Sarah. I do film reviews over on my YouTube channel under the name Popcorn Chat, talk about the latest film releases, as well as some older films, you know, always sort of those controversial lists, you know, top Star Wars films. I talk about Richard Linklater on there. And I also am always active on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. I'm on all the socials, so I'm always chatting film. And like Brian said, I also write for Coastal House Media, and I'm part of the Film Critics Association UK. So lots of things where you can find me, and always chatting, talking about films, TV, even music as well. Just giving my general thoughts that people generally, you know, agree or disagree with.
And what got you into film? What makes you such a fan of film?
Oh, gosh. I've been watching films since a really young age. I remember sort of discussing with my mum, like, the first cinema trip I went to see was Mulan. And we worked out backwards that I must have been 3 years old going to the cinema, which is wild to think about now. But yeah, I always remember watching films as a kid, like being an only child. My mum would just plump me in front of the TV. I'd watch VHSs on repeat. I'd watch, you know, Oliver the Musical, Blues Brothers. Maybe films not appropriate for children, but I just remember being like surrounded by films as a child, and that sort of carried on through my life. And I studied it at university, and I sort of do that in my day job. Like, I'm a camera operator and video editor, so it all sort of has sort of come back to film in some way or another.
Very nice, very nice. And getting into our topic of Richard Linklater, I always like to throw curveball questions at the start of these episodes. So you're given the opportunity to take a Richard Linklater character out to dinner, whether it's with your family, friends, or just yourself. Which characters would it be and why? You get to pick one guy and one girl. I have a feeling you might steal the guy that I'm going to pick. So tread lightly, tread lightly.
I mean, if you've seen like my Twitter or Instagram, I'm a little bit obsessed with Ethan Hawke. So I'm going to go with his character, Jesse, from any of the Before films. Okay, maybe he's not the most perfect character at times, but hey, you know, we could have some great discussions and long, you know, could go for a nice walk and talk. I love that. And then for a female character, without choosing Celine, who else do I choose? I think, I can't remember her name, but Patricia Arquette in Boyhood. I think the mum, I think I'd love to just have a chat with her, because she goes through some stuff, so I would really love to just sort of have that heart-to-heart with her.
Yeah, those are great picks. I love how, fittingly enough, you picked the two actors from Boyhood, even though you're picking an Ethan Hawke character that is completely different from his character in Boyhood. For me, thank God you saved Celine, because that's who I would pick as my female character. 100% I would pick Celine, and then I would just want her to take me up to her apartment and go, "Let me sing you a waltz." I just want her to just sing to me, Celine, sing to me. Mm-hmm. And speaking of singing, the guy character, easily without question, Dewey Finn from School of Rock, Jack Black's character. Yeah, in a heartbeat, absolutely, I would love to just go out to dinner with him. I would love the dinner to, or drinks to be similar to when he takes Joan Cusack to that bar and they start saying Stevie Nicks. I kind of want to have that same experience as he did in that film. But there's so many incredible characters throughout Richard Linklater's catalog. And going into Richard Linklater, Why do you think Richard Linklater is one of the most celebrated filmmakers working today? Why do you think people get excited whenever they see his name attached to a project? And what makes you such a fan of Richard Linklater?
I think a lot of people get excited whenever they see his name attached to a film because he always has this very much grounded perspective on people. It's not this sort of large scale a lot of the time. It's this kind of, oh, it could be, you know, Houston, Texas. It could be anywhere. But it's just about people and those relationships and conversations that happen day to day with a lot of people, and a lot of people can relate to that. I mean, that's what I take away from a lot of his films. I'm clearly, you know, I'm here in the UK. I don't live in Texas. There's a lot of things that happens in his life and the characters' lives that, you know, haven't happened in my life, but it's the people and the way the sort of the dialogue is crafted that I think makes him so unique is his whole angle on different family dynamics, relationships, you know, looking at masculinity. I think he's just got such a timeless approach to life, and you know, it's very sort of philosophical, a lot of this work, and I think, yeah, it doesn't matter what time period you set it in the 60s, 70s, you know, early 2000s, it's always going to be relevant, and I think that's what sort of makes people excited to see his films.
Yeah, the thing that I love most about Richard Linklater is that he's not a filmmaker that sticks to one specific genre. He's a guy that has mm-hmm. many tastes, and he explores many different tones. He's done comedies, he's done dramas, he's done thrillers, he's done animated films, he's working on a musical right yeah. now, he's done westerns, he's done it mm-hmm. all. And I really appreciate that Richard Linklater is a guy that is very versatile with his craft, that likes to do different kinds of films and show these different sides of him. I will say that when he makes a film that is a miss, it unfortunately is a huge miss. But when he hits, he really knocks it out of the ballpark. When he gives you a great film, it is a great film. And I love his foray into coming-of-age storytelling. I'm a huge coming-of-age guy. So anytime he makes a coming-of-age story, I get excited immediately. I'm always very mm-hmm. interested to see what he's going to do. But he's also a guy that's very fascinated with the passage of time and growing up and moving on and changing and experiencing all these different things. Time is a big theme that is utilized in pretty much all of his movies in some capacity. I mean, really, when you think about Boyhood and how that was shot over 12 years and the Before trilogy, how that was set over the course of almost 20 years, he is so prolific with bringing these stories to life about time. But he's also a guy that likes to have fun with his movies, too. He can make a movie that is the biggest downer possible, but then he can make a movie that makes you feel good and smiles from start to finish, which I really appreciate about him. So I'm very excited to delve into the career of Richard Linklater with you today. And I just say, without further ado, let's get right into our top five films directed by Richard Linklater. So, Sarah, what is your number five favorite Richard Linklater film of all time?
Okay, I think my number five is going to be very controversial amongst Richard Linklater fans, but it's a recent one for me, and it's Apollo 10 and a half. For me, I sort of have never really seen any of his rotoscoping animation films, but I just came into this one when it dropped on Netflix last year, and I just found something so charming and sort of honest about sort of family dynamics, sort of following this 10-year-old boy around sort of his sort of school life and sort of summer. And I think what's really sort of captivating about this is the ability to sort of highlight the sort of late 60s. And I'm like, I tell my mum, I was like, you need to watch this film, because she was that sort of age when the film's set. But I just think the whole, he's thought about everything, the music, the art style, the performances, you know. We've got Glenn Powell in there, Zachary Levi, Jack Black narrating. Like, he's got all of his familiar sort of on-cast, like, that he uses a lot of the time. And I just think there's something so wholesome about it. And I watched it again for this podcast, and I just found it so charming. It's like a perfect Sunday watch. And I like the sort of duality of the sort of imagination of this child. You're like, could he have actually tried to fly the spacecraft? I'm not sure. But it's still playing on that sort of youthful side before he sort of hits that preteen age. But yeah, I'm sure not everyone's going to agree with me having it in my top five, but I think it's what it's a really good one that he's done in the recent few years.
Yeah, I liked Apollo 10 and a Half a lot. It was right outside my top 10 of last year. I really enjoyed it. I love when Richard Linklater does his rotoscope animation. And I love how Richard Linklater, when it comes to his animated films, he doesn't do the typical hand-drawn or CGI animated. Rotoscope is something we really don't see in films, animated films. So I love that he does something that's very much him and something that feels very fresh. And
yeah,
this was a very beautiful time capsule of the 60s. And I know that some people were like, okay, after a while, it's just a little tiring that we're just seeing these vignettes of the 60s and Jack Black just narrating. But I thought it was very charming and endearing and wholesome. I love the animation. I thought the story was really sweet. And Jack Black's narration was honestly really perfect. Like, it made me go, I want Jack Black to, like, voice the audiobook of, like, something, because he just has this very calm, relaxing voice where he's just being subdued and everything. I really appreciate that side of him. I was really bummed when this film for a while was ineligible to be nominated for the Oscar for Anime Feature because it's rotoscope, and I'm like, this is a disservice to the animators who worked on this film. It's really unfair that these animation branches are looking at this film as not animation, but it is. It's so deserving of everything. It's unfortunate that it didn't end up getting a nomination. Would it have beat Pinocchio? Most likely not. But a nomination would have been very deserved. This was one of the better animated films to have come out last year. But I hope that more people hop on Netflix and give this film the attention that it deserves, because it is a really solid entry in Richard Linklater's filmography. And it's so funny that your number five is an animated film, because my number five is also an animated film from him. My number five is The Scanner Darkly from 2006, which I feel is the best animated film that he's directed. So this is based on a Philip K. Dick story. Philip K. Dick, for anyone who doesn't know, he's the guy who wrote Blade Runner and Minority Report. He's very influential in the sci-fi storytelling, but A Scanner Darkly is something that you would never expect Richard Linklater to direct, because this is a sci-fi thriller. Richard Linklater never did sci-fi at this point in his career, never did a thriller before, somehow still hasn't done a thriller again since, which is really ridiculous, because this is a very high-octane film. And I know there are people that are like, oh, this did not really need to be told in animation storytelling. But honestly, I think it really benefits the film greatly, because there are certain sequences where you watch this film and you're like, I don't know how this would have worked if this were told in live action. Like the certain sequences where he was like wearing that cloak and it was like changing different faces and everything. I don't know how that would have flowed in live action form. Maybe it would have been cool. I have no idea. But I love A Scanner Darkly. I think the mystery is so engaging. I think Keanu Reeves is fantastic in this film. I think one of the best performances of his career is in this film. And I think him working with Linklater, that's a very interesting pairing. One that I think works beautifully. And the ensemble cast here is also really terrific. You have Winona Ryder, Woody Harrelson, Robert Downey Jr. You have a great, tense film right in front of you, helmed by a fantastic filmmaker and starring a great array of actors. And it's so sickening that this film does not get talked about as much as it should. I understand that when it comes to rotoscope animation, it may throw some people off. The style may be a little jarring to some people. It was for me at first, but then I sat down and I watched this film and I really was impressed with how Richard Linklater brought this to life. And it makes me ask myself, why hasn't he done a thriller again since? Because I think he has a real knack for doing a film like this, and I hope that down the road he can do something like this again. I know that he's technically doing an action comedy in Hitman, his next film that's coming out very soon, but it's not the same as A Scanner Darkly, because Hitman is going to be more comedic. This is not a comedy at all. This is a pretty serious film. although Robert Downey Jr. and Woody Harrelson provide great comic relief for this film when needed. And I love when Woody Harrelson talks about Catch Me If You Can, because that's my favorite film of all time. So it's nice to know that Catch Me If You Can was finally incorporated into some movie. I love that so much. So Richard Linklater, thank you so much for that. A Scanner Darkly, if anyone out there listening to this has not seen that film, you need to do yourself a favor and check it out. It's one of Richard Linklater's best films, in my humble opinion. That is my number five. Are you going to pass, or is this not on your list?
This one's not on my list.
Oh, man.
It's only because, Brian, I've not seen it. I'm one of those people who's not seen it.
God.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, Sarah, you gotta change that right now and watch it immediately after we get off this podcast.
I know. I didn't have enough time to squeeze in because I wanted to watch some that I loved and also a few new ones. And I don't know why. I didn't prioritize that one.
It's totally understandable. It's unfortunately one that's also kind of hard to find. Like, it's not one that's very easily available on streaming services. You have to, like, rent it or whatever. But it is worth a rental, so I do hope that when you check it out, you do enjoy it, and I'm so curious to hear your thoughts on it when you get around to watching it. But going into our number fours, what is your pick?
My number four is Boyhood.
I'll say my piece when I get to it.
I'm sure you're aware, Brian, with this one. I only watched it recently for this podcast. I'm very late. I really love this film. As soon as it started, I knew this film was going to be for me. Like, as soon as I hear the music, like Blink-182 and Britney Spears, like, you know, they're in the soundtrack, or like the sisters singing them, I was like, I knew this film was going to be for me. What was really scary about this is it pretty much mimicked my own life with the sort of the big events that happen in it, and what Mason sort of revolves around culturally in terms of like music, the Wii, a Ripstick. I was like, those were all part of my childhood, and I realized that the actor's like maybe, you know, 6 months older than me, so it's really scary, a lot of the cultural references to my own life. But obviously, you know, fortunately not the kind of family, you know, domestic situation. I can't relate to that part. And then watching this older age, like I'm 27 now, I think I could see both sides of both being a child, and I think seeing the adult's perspective. Like I said earlier, I really identified and sort of understood Patricia Arquette's character in this as the mum. I could sort of felt so sorry for her for being in these situations that just seemed to keep repeating on her. And you know, I could feel a bit sort of frustrated at the kids having tantrums, but I was like, I can also remember being like that, like, as a teenager. So, and I think that's what Linklater is great at doing, is kind of combining these two worlds, two perspectives of being that child and then also being a mother or a father. I think that's what he gets so well. You know, he doesn't always have children in his film. There's another film where there's obviously a lot of children, but I think he's great at sort of captivating that moment of innocence and childhood and play. And I just think it's just so well done. And I know people criticize it because it's this long 12-year project it was called for ages, but I just think it's a well-crafted film with great performances. I do think that Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette are the better performances in this. I do think the child performance is a little weak at times, especially as they get older. That's like my one criticism. I just think he encapsulates life, the honest sort of depiction of life, unfortunately for a lot of people, really well in Boyhood. But yeah.
I am going to pass on this film. It's a little higher on my list, so I will be talking about it very, very shortly. I cannot wait to talk about Boyhood because I have a lot to say about this one for sure. I can't wait to do that. So, my number four.
Okay.
Is one that might piss off Richard Linklater fans that it's not in my top two, so I do apologize, and that is Days of Confused from 1993. Great coming-of-age film, great teen film, great high school film, and more importantly, great stoner film. That's the biggest takeaway of that film for me. Now, in all seriousness, Days of Confused is one of the most relaxing, calm, laid-back films ever. If you're looking for a movie to watch and just vibe to and relax and have a good time, where not much plot is happening, this is a great example of that, and one that earns the success and the status that it has received these last 30 years. I can't believe that this movie's 30 years old. It honestly shocks me that this movie came out, 3 decades ago. And it's so funny too, because when I first watched this movie, I knew that it came out in the 90s. But if you hadn't told me that, I would have thought this was a film from the 70s. It captured the aesthetic of the 70s. The soundtrack for this is one of the best soundtracks for any movie ever. And I guarantee you, most of the budget for this movie went towards that incredible soundtrack. When I list a lot of the songs that are in the soundtrack, everyone's gonna be like, whoa, that's cool. I mean, it literally opens with Sweet Emotion when they're driving up to the school. I think opening the movie on an Aerosmith song was like a great way of hooking the audience into the movie right away. But also, they have songs by Foghat, Alex Cooper, ZZ Top, Ted Nugent, The Runaways, War, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Deep Purple, Kiss, Black Sabbath. I mean, the amount of needle drops in this movie is insane. All of them are well earned, and Richard Linklater is no stranger to perfect needle drops in his films. I mean, Sarah just talked about some of the music that was incorporated in Boyhood, but Richard Linklater, perfect person when it comes to choosing music in his films. But Dazed and Confused poses an important question of like, what do you do after high school? How are you gonna grow up? And we all ask ourselves that question right before we finish high school. Is like, oh, now we're at the stage where we're gonna become essentially adults. Do we go to college? Do we not go to college? Do we just start working and getting jobs? Do we join the army or whatever? Like, what do we do? What do we do now that we're done with this period of our lives? And I love that question so much because it hits you even years after graduating college, and it still finds a way of hitting me. It's like, I'm still figuring out what I want to do in my life. I'm content with where I'm at right now in life, but I still ask myself the question of where do I belong? Where am I supposed to be? Who am I supposed to be? And Dazed and Confused ask the audience that question, but it also finds a way of being this great last day of school movie where these kids are just partying and having a good time and hooking up with girls and guys and everything, and it's just a really great time. It breezes by. There's not an ounce of fat to be found in this movie. I love Matthew McConaughey, and I think it goes without saying that you cannot talk about Dazed and Confused without talking about Matthew McConaughey's brilliant performance. That's what I love about all these girls, man. I get older, they stay the same age. I love it. There's so many great moments, specifically from that character. And it's so funny how the all right, all right, all right kind of became such a staple. And this was just one little period in the movie. It's pretty incredible how that stayed with Matthew McConaughey for this long. And sure, some people are like, that's old. Enough with the all right, all right, all right. But, it's timeless. This whole movie is timeless. And there's a reason why it's still regarded as one of the great coming of age films of all time, because it captures the coming of age elements really, really well. And that's something that Richard Linklater is no stranger to, of course. But I love Dazed and Confused. I really don't know what else to say. I mean, it also launched a lot of these actors' careers. I mean, Ben Affleck, Vince Vaughn, Parker Posey, who else was in it? Matthew McConaughey, obviously, Mila Jovovich, Adam Goldberg, Anthony Rapp, Joey Lauren Adams, so many people were in this movie, and some of these actors have had better careers than others for sure, but it's great. I love it so much. Makes me laugh, makes me think. Such a great time. So Dazed and Confused is my number 4. Are you gonna pass or is this not on your list?
It is on my list. Maybe it's a little bit higher. Maybe it's the next spot.
Ooh, tell us, what is your number 3?
My number 3 is Dazed and Confused.
Amazing, amazing.
And Brian, you've said a lot of what I was going to say, to be honest. It's one of these films that I watched in university for the first time after my lecturer mentioned it. And it was one of the first films where I sort of realized that you don't have to make a film about Doesn't have to have all these like plot points. It doesn't have to have all these beats of action and drama and such. It's more just about like character, and that can be done through dialogue. And I think it's really interesting they set it in the last day of school before the summer break, which a lot of people can relate to. And like you said, you can apply that to adult life. You know, what am I doing with myself after today? So yeah, I think it's one of these films that maybe not everyone will get, because some people want those sort of action and story beats to sort of propel a film, and that maybe isn't necessary in this film at times. But if you're just there to see the typical, you know, well, for me, American high school tropes of the bullies, the jocks, the stoners, it's got everything in this film. You know, saying that, like, it's very timeless. It's set in the sort of 70s, filmed in the 90s, but, you know, you can apply that to any time period or any sort of country. You know, we'd, you know, with those sort of types of people you get within schools. Yeah, and I just think it's something that people go back to again and again because of the characterization, because of, you know, they might want to see a young Matthew McConaughey, young Ben Affleck before they got big. And everyone comes back to this film at some point in their life. Like, I don't know many people who haven't seen this film. I just think it's so pivotal and really sort of launched Richard Linklater's career, because I think it was one of those big feature films after Slacker. So a lot of people talk about this one and sort of can see the direction that he's going in terms of telling a story about people in a small town. I think it's set in Houston, Texas, right? And sort of showing that it's about character and not necessarily about the big scale New York or LA setting that people want you to do. So yeah, I love it. Like, it's just, I implore anyone to watch it that hasn't watched it. It's just so good.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And you don't really come across many people that haven't seen it, but if you're one of those people that somehow hasn't seen Days of Confused, you definitely gotta change that right away, because it is one of those films that there's a reason why people still talk about it to this day. Like, people wouldn't talk about it if it wasn't as good as it was, but because it is very good, it's worth watching for sure. Yeah, let me ask you this. What's your favorite needle drop in the movie?
Ooh, good question.
Because there's so many great needle drops in this movie, so it's like, it's hard to choose.
It's really tricky. I mean, yeah, it's solid with Aerosmith, like you said, when you open it up. I know that's something he found quite, like, it was a massive thing for Linklater, wasn't it, to get those sort of tracks, especially for such an indie filmmaker. I know it was a massive thing for him to get those songs and set the scene. So I know that was a massive thing. So yeah, I think I'm trying to think what else is on the list. Have you got like a list of the songs again?
Yes. Let me pull that up right now. Okay, we have we have Sweet Emotion, we have Slow Ride by Foghat, School's Out by Alice Cooper, Love Hurts by Nazareth, Strange Hold by Ted Nugent, Cherry Bomb by The Runaways, Lowrider by War, Tuesday's Gone by Leonard Skinner, Highway Star by Deep Purple, Paranoid by Black Sabbath, Free Ride, of course, yeah, come on and take a free ride. Like, it's just, it's so good. It's so good. There's too many good songs in this film.
Too many good songs. I need to go and listen to the soundtrack after this.
Yeah, I'm
my Cherry Bomb's a good one.
So good. Love,
like,
Cherry
just
Bomb.
Just generally, it's a good song, and it's used in so many films. I can't give examples, but it's always like used, and it's always an epic moment.
Sweet. Love that. And now going into my number three. I'm sorry to everybody listening. I apologize to close friends of the show. I'm so sorry. Number three is Boyhood. Now, I said this to Sarah off air, and I'll repeat it here. While this isn't my favorite Richard Linklater film, I think this is the best thing that he's ever made. And I know that's up for discussion. I know it's all subjective. What do you think one film is the best or your favorite or what on, so on and so forth. But, man, Boyhood, my history with this film is so fascinating, because I remember not even knowing that Richard Linklater made a film over the course of 12 years until that Sundance 2014 lineup was announced. So they dropped this image and they're like, oh, first look at Richard Linklater's new film, Boyhood. You know, him laying on the grass, the iconic shot, you know, literally the first shot of the movie. And I'm like, oh, I love coming-of-age films. Oh, Ethan Hawke's in it. Love him. Patricia Arquette's in it. Love her. And then said, oh, shot over 12 years. I'm like, get the hell out of here. No, it was not. Who shoots a movie over 12 years? That's ridiculous. But my goodness, when I watched it and I heard all the hype, I was so worried that I was going to be the one guy walking out of the movie going, that sucked. But thankfully, when I walked out of the movie, I was like, that was amazing. And I was crying my eyes out, and I was just so speechless after what I had just watched. Like, when that film ended, I'm like, I didn't even know how to fully process what I had just watched. I literally saw this kid grow up in front of my eyes and just following his journey. But I love how it's not just about the boy. It's about the family surrounding him. I love that you get the sequence with his sister and with his parents. And let me just say, Patricia Arquette and Ethan Hawke deliver some of the best acting of their entire careers in this film. I'm Patricia Arquette especially is on a whole other level. She's absolutely wonderful. She's very heartbreaking to watch. You just want the best for Olivia. You want her to succeed. You want her to do well. But then she comes across all these terrible men that she marries. And, you know, you want the best for her. She's raising her two children. She wants to give them the best life possible. But then just when you think it's going to get better for her, it somehow gets worse. And it's so heartbreaking to watch. It's so difficult to watch at times, too. Like, at times, this becomes too real of a movie to the point where you kind of have to sheer away from it because it just feels so real and raw and honest. And there's a reason why I think Patricia Arquette swept that entire season. She really gave an extraordinary performance, and I don't think she's ever been better. And honestly, I don't know if she ever will be better. I really think that this is going to be the magnum opus of her acting career. I think that this is going to go down as the best acting that she'll ever do. And Ethan Hawke is also terrific, too. I love the maturity that goes through Mason Sr. throughout this movie. Because when we first are introduced to him, he's very cocky and very much, oh, I want to have a good time. I don't really care too much about anything. I love my children, but I don't really care too much about myself. But then he matures, he grows up as the movie progresses, and I love it. And that last scene between him and Mason after Mason's graduation, where Mason's like, what is the point of all this? And he's like, dude, listen, she wasn't even that great of a girl. You just gotta focus on the now and everything. That may not be exactly the words that he said, but it's something similar to that. Man, I love both of the performances from them. And, you know, going off the acting from the children, Lorelai Linklater, not my favorite performance, but I'm able to kind of push that aside because of how much I love the movie. Ella Coltrane, I will agree. When Ella was a kid, I thought his acting was really exceptional. I thought he was really, really strong. But unfortunately, as he got older, his acting did definitely get worse. Like, it's okay to kind of be a not-so-good actor when you're a little kid. But when you're older, it's like, okay, at this point, you gotta better yourself. But at the same time, he was acting like a regular angsty teenage boy. So I guess he kind of nailed that aspect of the performance for sure. But yeah, Mason may not be the most interesting character, but that I think that's what makes it so interesting to watch still, is because you're just seeing a regular teenage kid. You're seeing a portrait of this teenager and his family, this kid and his family. And I love that so much. Did this movie have to be as long as it is? No, absolutely not. Was I bored any minute of this movie? Absolutely not. I could have watched another hour following this character and his family. I really was engrossed by this movie. I think it's paced very, very well. If it went very fast, I don't think it would have worked. And I don't think it's super slow. It definitely feels long, but it doesn't feel 2 hours and 45 minutes, in my opinion. And the needle drops in this film, I have to talk about them for a second. You brought up Blink-182. Love that you brought that up. You know how we just talked about how awesome was that Dazed and Confused opened with Aerosmith's song? Imagine being me, the biggest Coldplay fan in the world, and they open up Boyhood with Yellow, and I'm just like, ah! Like, I just got so excited. When I saw this film, I saw it with my dad when it came out, and I just like kind of squealed quietly to myself. I was like, ah, it's Coldplay! And it just, but also Richard Linklater was smart with picking the songs that were like popular for the time that they shot the particular segment. And I love how he essentially just shot 12 short films and combined it into one long feature film. They would get together for a couple of days every single summer and shoot the movie. And I love that. They shot over like 39 days over the course of 12 years. And the movie cost, I think, a total of like $5 million. So it was like $250,000 per year that they would shoot. And IFC was so worried that this movie would not do well at all. They were worried that this was going to be a big flop. This was going to be a big. It was a huge gamble to put a movie like this out, but it got so much acclaim, it got so many awards, and IFC's like, man, we were so wrong about this movie, but goddamn, we're glad that it did well. Although, I will say this, I do feel for Richard Linklater that he didn't win any Oscar for this movie, because quite frankly, he really should have gotten something for this movie. I'm a huge fan of Birdman. I love that movie so much, and I think that was a very deserving Best Picture winner. But Richard Linklater should have. If you wanted to award Birdman Best Picture, that's totally fine. And yes, the directed by Alejandro is exceptional, it's brilliant. But what I would have done personally is award Richard Linklater Best Director and then still give Birdman the high prize of Best Picture. Because the fact that Boyhood only won one Oscar and it was for Patricia Arquette is kind of ridiculous, in my opinion, because I'm sure people have tried to make films over the course of many years, but the fact that Richard Linklater did it, and he did it as successfully as he did, that's a huge win. And I know that people say, oh, a nomination is a win of itself, which, yes, it is, but Richard Linklater still should have been awarded someone. It's kind of ridiculous that Richard Linklater doesn't even have an Oscar to his name. He's been nominated so many times, so hopefully he'll be able to win one soon. A lot of people make a joke that he'll win for that 20-year musical that he's making, but you know, who know? Who knows? Maybe he will. I don't know. But yeah, Boyhood is exceptional, and without Boyhood, I wouldn't have met some of my favorite people in the world. There was this hashtag on Instagram called #BoyhoodYourself, where you would reenact the shot of him laying on the grass. And because of that, I met one of my absolute best friends in the world, and we've been friends for now. It's been almost 10 years since this movie's come out, which is crazy. And it's really incredible what movies, or really any form of art, can bring to someone and bring people together. That's the magic of why a lot of us love movies and TV and music and video games and comics and books and theater and all these different things. Boyhood is exceptional. It's a fantastic film. 2014, what a wonderful year for film. I mean, it's really hard to pinpoint what the best film of that year was. My favorite was Whiplash, but Whiplash, Birdman, and Boyhood, those were my top three. It was just a truly great year for cinema. And in my lifetime, there has not been a better year of cinema than 2014. I love Boyhood so much. It is my number three.
Wow, that was impressive, Brian.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate that. And now we get into the top two. I know for a fact, we have at least one film in common. We have at least one film in
We've
common.
got
That's,
to.
I definitely believe that. Now, I said to Sarah off air that unfortunately, and I know these are my rules, so I'm the one who could control them, but to be fair, and I have to be fair to every other film, we can only include one film in a franchise. So unfortunately, we're only going to have one Before film in our list. And I know for a fact that one of them is in her top two because obviously Sarah hasn't talked about any of them yet. But I'm so curious to know which Before film it is. and where it lands on her list. So, Sarah, tell me and the audience what your second favorite Richard Linklater film is.
So my second favorite Linklater film is Before Sunrise. So I've gone with the first one in the trilogy. It was very close though, because on this watch I nearly very closely put Before Sunset, but I've gone with Before Sunrise for this one. I was quite late to watching the Before trilogy as a whole. Only watched it, I think it was last Christmas or the Christmas before. And the first film, I knew it was a walk and talk. And I didn't know much else about it, so I was a bit skeptical going in. And my God, I absolutely love this film. I had never seen a sort of romantic film like this before. I was very partial to the sort of, mainstream comedies that we had in the 2000s, Confessions of a Shopaholic or Bride, whatever it is, that kind of very cheesy sort of romantic comedy is very much what I was used to. So to see something like this, which has obviously predated those films, was just such a fresh breath of fresh air. It was just amazing how much I was drawn into these characters when you first see them on the train and you see that interaction where they're looking at the sort of couple bickering and they sort of connect over that and the books they're reading. I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna love this film. And to know that, his Jesse sort of decides to sort of take this character, says, Celine, come with me to Vienna and just let's explore, for the rest of the night before I get my flight. It just, the concept itself is so romantic. And just the whole walk and talk is so beautiful. I think it works so well because of the conversations that they have, about life, relationships, what they think, about sort of morals and their sort of past experiences. It all makes a very sort of real sort of conversations that people have, and it very much gives sort of character depth about these people that we've just met as well. So I think that's what's great, and sort of having them walk and talk at the same time, pretty much non-stop for a lot of it, and just sort of the changing atmosphere, the people they meet along the way, and that happens across the other films, but this film, it works so well, and allows them to sort of pivot from those moments, whether it's a palm reader or they go to and play pinball. Those are moments where they're doing something, but it reveals a lot about their characters, which I think is very, very interesting. And obviously, the time constraint of the sunrise is always going to be there, and you're like, oh, okay, we're going to have such a limited amount of time. And this is a film very much like you said, Brian, with Boyhood. Like, I wanted more from this. The fact it's like only, what, an hour and 25? I was like, I need more content. I need more of Jesse and Celine. So luckily we do get that, obviously, 9 years' time. But I just was just so captivated by these characters. The dialogue feels so improvised, yet when you really look into Linklater's work, he is such a precise kind of guy when it comes to his script writing. But the fact that I sort of found out that this wasn't improvised was mind-blowing, because I think Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy are fantastic actors, and it really shines through in this. And I just love these characters and this film. There we go.
What is your take on the other two films in this trilogy?
Yeah, like I said, I think the Before Sunset film was very close to, like, if we didn't have the sort of element of there being not a franchise in this list, I would have had Before Sunset very, very close to this film. I think I fell in love with this one, probably more on the second watch coming up for this podcast, and the sort of, they're further in life, and I just think it's interesting how much they've grown between that time, and I think having those sort of more mature conversations is very sort of enlightening. And I find myself between the two in my life at the moment, with the sort of the age of the characters. Before Midnight doesn't really work as well for me. I think it is the weakest of the trilogy. Again, maybe it's because I'm not there on that level, as a person. I can't connect maybe with the family side in some ways, or the
Right.
I just find it a little bit tricky to sort of, attach myself to those characters. But yeah, and there's less walk and talk. There's a lot more sitting in that one. And so, but obviously, the film has to progress with the characters. But yeah, one and two are like fantastic. If they were just like a double feature, like perfect. Yeah, but Before Midnight is just a little bit at the bottom for me in terms of the trilogy.
Totally understandable. I totally get you there. So my number two is also a film in the Before trilogy. It is not Before Sunrise. It is Before Sunset. That is my favorite of the trilogy.
Okay, that's fine.
I love all three of them equally. I think all three of them are masterpieces. And I don't usually like to say masterpieces, like, unless if I genuinely mean it. But I really think that these are three of the best romances ever told. I personally would say that the Before trilogy is my favorite romance story told on screen. I just think it's one of the more honest, realistic portrayals of romance that we've seen on the big screen. And my thing is with romances, maybe I'm just a cynical guy. Me and romance movies are so hit or miss because, listen, I love some of the cheesy ones and everything where it's very on the nose and everything. But I personally take a liking towards the more realistic romances than the silly, sappy, over-the-top romances that we get. Although I do have a soft spot for Nancy Meyers films. I will admit that I have a huge soft spot for all of her movies. Every single one that she's done so far. So take that with a grain of salt if you have to. But Before Sunset, to me, is one of the best sequels ever made. I think if you're going to make a sequel that somehow is on the same level of the original but also finds a way of topping itself, this is a great sequel to do that. And can you imagine having seen Before Sunrise in the theater back in the 90s and you thought that was it? That was the story. That was it. And then all of a sudden, 9 years later, you find out they're making a sequel and you're like, they're making a sequel to this? Really? And then you watch and you're like, oh, okay. And then you watch this and you're like, oh, are they going to make another one of this? And then you find out and you're like, oh, God, not another one. Then you watch and you're like, okay, yep, all right. All right. Richard Linklater, you beast. I love the first one so much. It's incredible. My liking towards it definitely increases after each viewing, I would say. It took me a while to really love these three films. When I first saw them, I liked them a lot, but I wasn't as high on them as everyone else. I watched them for the first time probably about, I would say, 7 years ago. So right before I graduated high school was when I watched them for the first time. And I was like, these are good, but I get the hype, but I'm not there yet. And it wasn't until after I had my first strain of relationships where I'm like, okay, now this is kind of hitting me a lot. And now that I'm at the point where I'm not super far off from their age, especially, I mean, the first one, they're around the age that I'm at right now, but, you know, that second one, not super far off from there. And I don't know, it hit me a lot harder these last couple of years. And I rewatched the trilogy just last night, actually, in preparation for this recording. And this is neck and neck for me in terms of best trilogies. It's this and the Lord of the Rings trilogy that are like neck and neck. I think the Lord of the Rings trilogy might be my favorite in terms of rewatchability because it's definitely more exciting than the Before trilogy. But I think the Before trilogy is the kind of trilogy that you never thought you wanted or needed, but then you got it and you're glad that we have something like this, because a lot of the trilogies we have are just like the big blockbusters. You have the Lord of the Rings, you have your Star Wars trilogy, but then you have this as well, and it's so great that we have something like this. But Before Sunset, this film clocks in at only 85 minutes long. It takes place in real time. It doesn't skip ahead 2 hours later or 20 minutes later. It straight up takes place in an 85-minute period. From when they leave that bookshop to the ending at her apartment. And there are so many incredible long takes in this film. The longest, I think, lasted maybe 12 minutes. And I was reading a bit about when they shot this movie. They obviously shot it in Paris. It's set in Paris. And Paris is a place that I've always wanted to go to and have never been. And I hope that I get to go sooner than later. But they shot this during, like, the hottest time of the year. And keep in mind, Jesse is not exactly wearing the summer clothes. He has a suit on. I can't imagine being Ethan Hawke in that situation, shooting in 100-degree weather, but also I can't imagine being the cinematographer who's, you know, holding the camera and tracking it and walking with them and moving around. And it's just like, I cannot even imagine the amount of pressure that was riding on this when making this film, because the weather was blazing hot. It's ridiculous. But yeah, I love seeing where Celine and Jesse have gone since the events of the first film. They're much more mature, and the dialogue here plays a huge part in that. I think the dialogue feels a lot more natural in this film than it did in the first one, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Ethan Hawke and Julie Delphi actually co-wrote the script for Before Sunset. They didn't write the script for Before Sunrise. There are reports saying that they contributed some aspects to the screenplay, but this is credited as written by Richard Linklater, Ethan Hawke, and Julie Delphi, and the same thing happened with Before Midnight. And this was one of the coolest Oscar nominations ever, because this garnered the Best Adapted Screenplay nomination at the Oscars. It lost to one of my all-time favorite films, Sideways. I think it lost to a very good film. It's not like, oh, I'm angry that Before Sunset lost, but it lost to a very deserving title, so I'm not complaining at all. But the dialogue here is really great. The maturity here is definitely apparent and everything. And I was also reading reports saying that there were elements taken from Ethan Hawke's personal life and incorporated into the script, because at the time that this movie was being filmed, he was actually undergoing a divorce with Uma Thurman. So Jesse in the film talks about how he has this kid, but he's not exactly with this woman right now. He had this kid with this woman, but they're not exactly they're together, but not together. And Celine talks about how she's gone through a couple of relationships, but it's just building up. I just love how it just progresses. Like, you could see the tension just increasing between the two of them. And you're like, just do something, damn it, already. Just do something. And it's so good. It's so interesting following these characters. And, I mean, Ethan Hawke and Julie Delphi are incredible together and separately. They're fantastic. And the characters of Jesse and Celine are so fascinating to watch and everything. And this film has one of my all-time favorite endings for any film I have ever seen. I think the last 10 minutes of this movie are absolute perfection. And I don't think you could have ended it any better with the whole baby, you are going to miss that plane. I know. Then it just cuts and you don't know what happens until you click play in the next one. That was my big takeaway with watching these films for the first time. I'm like, oh, I have to wait. Oh, no, I don't. I could just click play right now. Great. I know what happens now. I don't have to wait 9 years like everyone else. I just think the approach that Richard Linklater brought to presenting these films is so unique and so fresh. But this really is, to me, the best piece of romance that we've seen on film. And I know, again, that's all subjective. Everything is subjective, but... And I obviously have not seen everything, but... It's going to be really hard for me to find a romance that tops the Before trilogy. And I think Before Sunset is one of the best romances ever made, and it's one of my all-time favorite films. Again, I love all three of these films equally. It's really hard to pinpoint a favorite, but if I'm being honest with myself, I think Before Sunset is my favorite of the trilogy, but I also think it's the best of the trilogy. I'm so glad that we got to talk about the Before films today, because you can't do a Richard Linklater podcast without talking about the Before trilogy. It would just be ridiculous. Now, I know you and I talked a little bit about it briefly off air, but how would you feel if they were to make a fourth one? They already missed a mark because they would make a film every 9 years, so they're about a year behind from that. But there are people online saying, oh, maybe they'll make one 18 years from when Before Midnight came out, because the trilogy takes place in an 18-year span, and they could do one where they're much older. But I personally don't want to see another story. And again, I say that as if I'm not going to watch it if they do make another one. But I love the way that the trilogy ended, and I love how it kind of ended similarly to how it began. They saw a bickering couple on that train, the first one. And then fast forward to the end of the trilogy, and they become the bickering couple, which I appreciate. I appreciate that complete 180 and everything of how it all ties back in some capacity. But yeah, how would you feel if right now a report came out saying that Richard Linklater, Ethan Hawke, and Julie Delphi were reuniting for a fourth Before film?
I'm very much, you know, you should just leave things as they are. You know, some things are just like a nice, neat package. But if I saw those three names come up on an article, I think I would lose my shit, to be honest. Even though I don't think it's needed for the characters, I will still be very excited. But yeah, that means they'd probably then have like at least 18-year-old like twin daughters. Like they'd be really old. And then is it becoming boyhood then? Like what's, I don't know. I think it's just like, it's perfect as it is. And it's really interesting what you said then about the sort of the bickering couple at the end being them, and then that's how they sort of first came to be in the first. I never thought of that, but I guess it's that kind of cyclical, you know, relationships kind of dynamic. And yeah, it's interesting, but I think just leave it as it is because that's just a perfectly neat little show. I think there's some franchises that go into like four, like Toy Story 4 or whatever. I was like, I don't want it, just leave it. Just leave it as it is.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And everyone's bought the Criterion Collection anyway, so that will just, people have to buy another set, and then it just ruins everything.
No, absolutely, absolutely. But honestly, I feel like if they did make a fourth Before movie, it would probably end up being the best fourth film of a franchise of all time.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It
Yeah, I
probably
think
would be,
so, but
although I mean it's kind of hard to top that when we just had John Wick 4 this year, and that was amazing.
true. And then obviously you've got like the Mission Impossible films, like, you know,
Yeah.
there's loads of big franchises that do work, but
Maybe
yeah.
Richard Linklater's fourth Before film should just be an action movie.
Yeah. I mean, what else can you do before, like in terms of time periods of the day? What else can you do before? It needs to be
Before tomorrow.
before dusk,
Dusk,
before
dusk.
the eclipse, before eclipse. I don't know. We're getting too far into
Before new moon, before breaking dawn. We're just gonna
it.
say all the
Part one,
Twilight
part
titles.
two.
Before Twilight.
They've been vampires the whole time.
Oh, thank God. Richard Linklater does need to make a vampire movie, so it would all just fit perfectly.
Yeah.
Oh man, love it so much. All right, so now our number ones. I have no idea what your number one favorite Richard Linklater film is. Although a part of me thinks that it could be the same as my number one. I have no idea, because if this film that I have as my number one is somehow not on your list, I don't know if I'll be able to recover from that.
Yeah, unfollowed on Twitter.
So unfollowed on Twitter, unfollowed on Letterboxd, blocked. Just anyone listening, don't have Sarah on your podcast. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. So Sarah, tell us your favorite Richard Linklater film of all time.
Okay, my number one favorite film by Richard Linklater is School of Rock, and I don't think that's any surprise to anyone that knows me or whatever. And I think it's many people's favorite Richard Linklater's film without even knowing it was Linklater. Like I saw this in the cinema in 2003, so I was 7 years old. So I was like, perfect time to see it. And I just came out of the cinema like, oh my God, this is the best thing I've seen. And ever since then, I've just been watching it on repeat. When it's on DVD, it gets like reruns on the TV. It's probably one of the films that I can quote most. Like I know the script, I would say, pretty well. It's just so, it's always been there, like throughout my sort of, you know, childhood and teens. And it's something I can watch like as a comfort watch if I'm ill or if I'm like, you know, feeling a bit down. I'll stick this film on because it's gonna make me feel a lot better. You know, it stars Jack Black, of course, Joan Cusack, Mike White, Sarah Silverman, Adam Pascal. A little rent drop there. I know you'll like that one, Brian. Yeah, I think it's just such a sort of star-studded cast, which obviously I didn't realize as a child, but I knew who Jack Black was. But I just think it's such a good like comedic film, but it also has a lot of heart about it. I think the dynamic between Dewey Finn and the children is great. And I know, like, I think, yeah, at this point Richard Linklater hadn't really like worked with kids in film, and I think Jack Black was a little bit skeptical as well. But the relationship they have and having children that can actually play these instruments works so well. So when they're practicing, they're jamming, it looks authentic, and you can sort of see their friendship and relationship grow as the film goes on. And I think that's because the kids really sort of understand him, and I think I really understood this film, seeing it as a seven-year-old at the time, was the fact that Doofin talks to these kids as adults. He doesn't really talk down to them. Well, okay, maybe he might insult them, but he sort of talks to them as adults, and I think that's really appreciated when you're a child. You're not sort of patronising them. And I don't know why, but I cried when I watched this again for this podcast. I think I just got really emotional. I think it's when they were sort of going on to the final sort of battle of the bands. Something hit me in the heartstrings, and I just sort of happy tears as I was watching this. Like, it's just so fun. It's quotable. There's great songs. Like, there was music in there that I never knew of these bands. And then I'd hear like a public song in the public and be like, oh, that's AC/DC or whatever. I'm like, hey, that's from School of Rock. That's how I know that film. So it's just sort of educated me. It brings me joy. And it's just, it's so much fun. And everyone at some point in their life has watched this and I think has just found joy in it. And there's no one I know that hates this film. I mean, someone might come for you in the Twitter sort of comments to this podcast, but generally everyone I know loves this film, and I think it's really hard not to love it. I mean, some of my favourite quotes obviously are, you're tacky and I hate you. Like, that's such an iconic line, and it's just memed to death now. And there's the scene where he's in the classroom and he's sort of at the parent-teacher conference and he says, you know, your kids have all really touched me. And I'm pretty sure I've touched them. And it's just that kind of joke that maybe you wouldn't have got as a child, but now you're watching it as an adult, you're like, whoa. Yeah, it's just, it's got something for everyone. And obviously I didn't know it was Mike White at the time, who has now obviously done, oh my God, what is that program on HBO?
The White Lotus.
The White Lotus, there we go. And I was like, this is like the start of Mike White sort of really sort of coming into the mainstream. But the writing, performances, the soundtrack, everything's good in this film. I love it. That's all I have to say, Brian.
Well, we could still be friends because School of Rock is also my number one.
Yeah.
So, man, you know, again, another movie where my relationship with it is so interesting, because as a kid, watched this movie religiously, was obsessed with it as a little kid, even though, again, a lot of jokes flew over my head, I had no idea what was going on and understanding anything, but I just loved watching Jack Black teach these children how to do music and all that stuff. But then when I got older, I stumbled across this film again after having not seen it probably since I was a kid, and something just opened up in me again. My love for the film just came back, and I felt like a piece of me that I had been searching for so long has made its way back towards me. And this is one of my all-time favorite films. It's very, very close to being in my top 10 of all time. This is just one of the most feel-good films you will ever see. You have the biggest smile on your face from start to finish with this film. It's one of those films where, like you said, Sarah, it's hard to not at least like. There are films out there where you can understand where someone may not like it. Like, I can understand someone not loving Boyhood. I can understand someone even not loving the Before Choji. But how do you not like School of Rock? I mean, it's one of the most innocent, heartfelt, feel-good movies that you will ever see out there. It's so freaking funny. Jack Black is incredible as Dewey Finn. He's fantastic. And honestly, it's kind of disgusting that he was not nominated for an Oscar for this. The Academy has a history of not recognizing comedic performances as much as they should, but this is genuinely a great performance on its own. Like, there's still so many layers to this performance, even though it's a primarily comedic performance. And Jack Black has never been better. I really think that he's at his best when he works with Richard Linklater, because a film obviously that didn't make my list is Bernie, and I think that might be the best acting that Jack Black's ever done, because we see this serious side of him that we really hadn't seen before. But he gives it his all in School of Rock. Obviously, him being a musician in real life and someone that is so passionate about rock music and all music from like the 70s and 80s, and incorporating that into a character that really is the amalgamation of himself is really incredible. And I love the journey of Dewey Finn, how he's a washed up rocker. He can't pay his rent. He got kicked out of the band that he brought together, and he's basically down on his luck. And then he decides to impersonate his roommate, Ned Schneebly, picks up the phone and just goes, "Hello, this is Ned Schneebly." And then he decides to just go to the school, be the substitute teacher, originally just there for money. And then he realizes that he sees this music potential in these students. And he not only teaches the students something, he kind of teaches something to himself as well. And I love that aspect of the movie. It's not just about this guy trying to teach music to kids. He's learning a lot of stuff about himself. He's growing up in some capacity in his own way. And I love that so much. And seriously, Jack Black not being nominated for an Oscar for this is really, really sickening. If Johnny Depp could get nominated for playing Jack Sparrow in that first Pirates of the Caribbean, a very deserving nomination, by the way, Jack Black should have been nominated as well for School of Rock. But then you have this great supporting cast around him. I mean, all the kids are amazing. They're fantastic. Every single one of them. There's not one of them that is bad. They're all having a good time. And they all seem pretty mature for their age, but they're also acting like children, which is what they should. They're having the time of their lives making this movie. And Joan Cusack as Ross, Principal Mullins, is amazing. She has great comedic timing here. She just comes out of her shell and then she just lets it all out. And she is great in this. Joan Cusack is a very underrated talent. Not a lot of people give her the recognition that, quite frankly, she deserves. Mike White, not only writing a fantastic screenplay, he's very good as Ned Schneebly. And Sarah Silverman, I'm not a huge Sarah Silverman person, but I think she worked really well for this role. And the fact that you said that I would appreciate the Adam Pascal mention, that makes me so happy that clearly you know how much I love Rent. I'm just so happy about that. But yeah, it's no qualms with the acting, no qualms with the writing. This is definitely the most mainstream title that Richard Linklater has done. It just blows my mind that the same guy who made Boyhood and the Before Trilogy also made School of Rock. It just blows my mind because you would never think for a second that they're the same person. You would never think in a million years that Richard Linklater, the guy who made School of Rock, is the Richard Linklater who made the Before Trilogy and Boyhood. And you would never think in a million years it's the same guy. Again, that just shows how much range he has as a filmmaker. Fantastic Neo drops throughout the movie. And the last sequence of the Battle of the Bands is awesome. You talked about how you got emotional during it. I get emotional every time I watch it too. It's just so exciting. It's like you get to this moment and they're finally doing it. It's finally happening. It's just big fist pump and like just a big old hell yeah and everything. My God, I can't believe this movie's 20 years old. Cannot believe for a second that this
I
is
know.
that old, because I remember the first time I watched this at home. I remember my parents put this on for me and my sister, and I was just in love with it then, and I still love it now. And it's the appreciation has grown so much as an adult for me. It's literally my comfort movie. Whenever I feel down and I need someone to put me in a good mood, I always put on School of Rock, or even just a scene from School of Rock. I love it so much. That bar sequence always puts me in a good mood. The sequence where he's singing the immigrant song in the car, that puts me in a good mood. Everything is just great. The energy that Jack Black has, he's just so wild. He has so much energy in him, and I'm like, dude, simmer down, like calm down. But it's just so good. It's so good. And seriously, I always say that he was the best actor of that year in 2003. He really was. No disrespect to any of the people that got nominated for Oscars that year, but that was an extraordinary performance. And it's so crazy, too, that people are like, "Oh, I never heard of this Mike White guy before now until The White Lotus." And I'm like, How dare you forget about School of Rock? He's Ned Schneeble, you dumb fucks.
I know.
Like, are you kidding me? The White Lotus is pretty good. I do like The White Lotus. It's pretty insane how that's the same guy who wrote School of Rock. Again, range. But, yeah, School of Rock is my favorite Richard Linklater film as well. I know that there are probably going to be people that are like, really, that's your favorite? Yeah, it is my favorite. Accept it. If you don't like it, go home. Yeah, School of Rock is my number one. I'm glad that we agreed on that. It's crazy. We had four films in common. Well, three films in common, yeah. Technically. But, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty happy with our list. But, you know, we're definitely going to give a mention to the films that didn't make the cut. But before we do that, let's recap our list from 5 to 1. So, Sarah, what is your list?
My number 5 is Apollo 10.5. And number 4, we've got Boyhood. And number 3, we've got Dazed and Confused. Number 2, we've got Before Sunrise. And number 1, School of Rock.
And to recap my list, coming in number 5 is A Scanner Darkly. Number 4, Dazed and Confused. Number 3, Boyhood. Number 2, Before Sunset. And number 1, School of Rock. So that is it with our list. So let's talk about some of the films that didn't make the cut. So, Sarah, what are some films that you want to give a shout-out to that didn't make your list?
I mean, yeah, Before Sunset, by not having the sort of other franchised films in there, Before Sunset is everything you said and more. Like, it's, yeah, I think it resonates a lot more with the age I'm at. So, I might think it's a little better, but maybe that's just where I'm at in my life. But generally, I still think Before Sunrise has the impact. So that's why it's made it onto the list. I also had Bernie in my honourable mentions as well. I think that was recommended to me at university as one of Jack Black's, sort of, again, amazing performances and was very sort of different for him at the time. And it's a really interesting story, but it's comical at the same time. I implore anyone to watch Bernie if you haven't. It's bizarre, but based on reality, and that makes it weirder. And then I also have a really random one, but I literally watched it yesterday, and it is Last Flag Flying, which I think came out in 2019. Stars Bryan Cranston, Steve Carell, Lawrence Fishburne. And I was so surprised at this because Richard Linklater doesn't really tackle sort of political issues in some ways. And I think it's still got that dynamic about just people and the sort of subject matter at hand as they're trying to navigate across the US, and there's sort of flashbacks of Vietnam and the sort of military commentary. And I think these three like male leads give excellent performances. I think it's such a hidden gem, and it only came out like, yeah, what's that, 4 years ago? Yeah, I completely like passed me by. And I was really surprised because I've seen some of his newer ones, which aren't as good. But I think this one is more of a mainstream film, shall we say, that has that sort of production value. I thought he still had that characterization, which felt like Linklater, and those long dialogue scenes on trains and cars. It still felt like him. Yeah, I mean, you could go on and on, but yeah, those are some of my favorites that didn't make it into the list.
Yeah, so in terms of honorable mentions for me, I want to shout out some of his super smaller films. Tape from 2001, which stars Ethan Hawke, Uma Thurman, and Robert Sean Leonard. It's set entirely in a hotel room. And I'm a big fan of dialogue-heavy pieces, which is one of the other reasons why I appreciate the Before trilogy so much. But I also am a big fan of films set in one location. And this is one that does not get talked about as much as it should. Understandably so, it's a lot smaller compared to Richard Linklater's other films, but it's one that definitely needs to be talked about. It's so good. Some great acting from the three actors, and, you know, it's hard to make a film with just three people in one location work as well as it does, but Richard Linklater finds a way of making it work seamlessly. I think it's a really, really strong film, one that I highly recommend. Mean Orson Welles is another super small title from Richard Linklater. This is best known as the one time that Richard Linklater collaborated with Zac Efron. This was right after he did High School Musical. And, you know, the idea of Zac Efron being in a film directed by the guy who made School of Rock and the Before films is really interesting, and he's very, very good in this film. You also have Claire Danes, but Christian McKay plays Orson Welles, and he is amazing in this. Honestly, Oscar-worthy acting from him. He is so good. He looks like Orson Welles, sounds like Orson Welles. I honestly thought I was watching the real Orson Welles. I didn't even think for a second I was watching an actor portraying him. I thought it was so good. If you're a big fan of theater, it's a film that's worth watching. It's just about Orson Welles directing a production of Julius Caesar in the 30s. It's really, really good. Highly recommend. Bernie, I'm glad you brought that up. Jack Black is amazing in it. And the way that he talks throughout the movie is just so hysterical. Marjorie, you're making it very hard to be your friend. I'm going to come back some other time. It's so good. And the fact that it's a true story, too, even crazier, honestly. Just insane to me. Last Fuck Fine, I really liked. I liked that one a lot. Those three actors, I think just the pairing of them is so perfect. Bryan Cranston, definitely a great comic relief. Lawrence Fishburne is always great in anything that he's in. And that's definitely the most subdued performance that Steve Carell has ever given. He's very calm and quiet in this movie, which I really appreciate seeing the side of him, because you watch him in comedies and obviously in The Office, and he's very loud and in your face. But then you can watch him in other dramas like A Foxcatcher, where he's like really terrifying. But then you see him in Last Fuck Fine, and he's like the most wholesome guy ever, and you just want to give him a big hug. And also great mustache, too. Great mustache. Fantastic stuff. Last Fuck Fine is really good. Apollo 10 and a Half, obviously, you brought that up before on your list. And then that might be... Oh, Everybody Wants Some. I'm a big fan of Everybody Wants Some. It's kind of in the similar vein of Days of Confused. It's not as good as Days of Confused, but I enjoy it very much. I have a soft spot for that movie. It came out at a time where, quite frankly, I wasn't really that happy with life. And then I saw it, and it just helped me feel good and everything. So I really appreciate that. So, yeah, those are my honorable mentions. I mean, there's really nothing else to say because, again, you brought up that Richard Linklater's current films, his more modern films, aren't as good. Like, Where'd You Go, Bernadette? Oh, my God. What a chore to get through. And I love Cate Blanchett. I love Cate Blanchett, but, God, that was bad. Bad News Bears. I mean, the word bad is in the title, and it's pretty bad.
I've not seen that one.
It's not the finest hour of Richard Linklater. And Suburbia, good God. It was just him trying to make Clerks, and it did not work at all. It just... Oh my God.
Because didn't Kevin Smith like see Slacker and was like, I'm going to make Clerks? And then, I'm going to try to make Clerks.
Without Slacker, Kevin Smith wouldn't have gotten into film and he wouldn't have made Clerks. But to talk about some of the films that Richard Linklater has coming out, one that is making its way around the festivals right now as we speak, has no release date yet, but hopefully will come out later this year. It's called Hitman, and it is an action comedy starring Glenn Powell. And it is supposedly based on another true story where an undercover Houston police officer poses as a reliable hitman to arrest those trying to hire him until he saves a woman in need. Glenn Powell actually co-wrote the script with Richard Linklater, so this definitely seems like it's going to be totally in the same vein as a Bernie, but with more of an action spin. I'm very excited for this. It's about to make its premiere at the Venice Film Festival at the time of this recording. But when you guys are hearing this, it will have already played at Venice. And it will have played at Toronto, which I will be seeing the film at. So if you guys want to know my thoughts, follow me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Brian Suffield. Thank you very much. So talk about your anticipation for Hitman.
I'm excited with this one because I think it's a little bit tonally different. But we know Linklater can do range. He obviously loves working with Glenn Powell. I think he's possibly his new Ethan Hawke. I think he's his new muse. But I'm curious about the tone of it. Like, if you say it's like Bernie, it's like that dark comedy. But there's been a few stills released at the time of recording, so we're just going off those. But it looks very sort of like action thrillery. So I'm curious to see if there's any sort of comedy coming across in this one. But either way, I'm going to be there watching it in the cinema, or if it gets put into streaming, I'm definitely going to be watching this one as soon as it comes out.
Yeah, I'm very excited, and I love this little resurgence of Glenn Powell's career. We definitely owe that to Top Gun Maverick. Top Gun Maverick definitely caught people's attention towards Glenn Powell again, and rightfully so, because Glenn Powell, he is a daddy for sure, so, you know, It's nice to know that Glenn Powell is now back on screen and everything. And then another film that Richard Linklater has coming out. We don't know when it's coming out. We're going to have to wait quite a while for this. It is his adaptation of Merrily We Roll Along, which is based on the musical of the same name from the great Stephen Sondheim. And this stars Ben Platt, Beanie Feldstein, and probably the hottest actor working today in independent cinema, Paul Mescal. Very interested to see how this pans out. One, it's Richard Linklater's first time doing a musical. He's never done one before, so that's very cool that he's finally doing something out of his wheelhouse. Number two, this musical is not exactly the most celebrated in Sondheim's catalog. It's not regarded as the worst thing that he's done, but it's also not regarded as one of the best musicals that he's done. It's not in the same regard as Company or Sweeney Todd or West Side Story or Sunday in the Park with George. I'm actually seeing this on stage in 2 weeks because they're bringing it to Broadway.
Wow.
And Daniel Radcliffe's going to be in it, and I'm very excited to see Harry James Potter on Broadway. I cannot wait to see that. I'm super excited for that. But this film's not coming out for close to 20 years. Richard Linklater decided to shoot this in real time because this musical is actually told backwards, where it's told, it starts off with them as older people and then it ends with them as younger people. So they already shot the first, maybe third of the movie, and we're not going to get the other two thirds shot for a while. Now, originally, Paul Mescal was not in this movie. Originally, Blake Jenner was in this movie, the star if everybody wants him, but not to get too much into it because we like to stay positive on the show, but Blake Jenner dropped out of the film, and then Paul Mescal came in to replace him. And, you know, everyone wants to work with Paul Mescal right now, and rightfully so. I mean, if you guys watched After Sun, you know exactly what you're getting into with this guy. Or Normal People, if you watched that as well. Like, he is extraordinary. I'm really excited to see Richard Linklater be crossed off of the directors that Paul works with. I'm not a big Ben Platt fan, but I really liked Theater Camp. I was a huge fan of that movie. So, you know, maybe if Ben Platt is given right material, maybe I'll be happy with it, because I have a huge hatred for Dear Evan Hansen. And I'm not going to really get into that right now because I don't want to have an aneurysm on the podcast. And Beanie Feldstein is very good. I like her a lot. Love Lady Bird. Love Booksmart. She's very talented. Yeah, I'm really excited to see this. I hate that we have to wait, like, probably at least at this point, maybe like 15 years for the movie. I don't know why he can't just shoot the movie now and just, there's something called makeup. Just make them look older. Like, Bradley Cooper did his Maestro biopic, and he has Leonard, he's doing makeup where he's Leonard Bernstein as an 80-year-old. So why couldn't you just shoot it now? Like, Rich, you already did a movie where you shot it in real time. You don't need to do it again. We appreciate that you want to do it, but you really don't need to put yourself through that again, buddy. Will I be there day one to watch it? If I'm still alive at that point, sure, I will be there day one. So what is your anticipation for Merrily We Roll Along?
Yeah, I don't know this musical. I mean, I love musicals, but I don't know this one. So you talking about how it's backwards, I was like, oh, okay, so we're doing a Benjamin Button, but, you know, in a musical setting. Interesting. I think the cast is pretty good. I know Paul Mescal has done musicals. I think that's what he did at theatre school. I've seen clips of him singing, so he can sing.
Yeah,
I think he was in...
He sung his heart out in Carmen, and he rocked my world in that. That was like...
Carmen, that's it. Yeah.
Carmen! I liked Carmen a lot. After watching that, I'm like, okay, yeah, he could do any musical.
Okay, that's reassuring to hear then. And obviously, yeah, Ben Platt, very musical, and Beanie Feldstein, both, you know, stage and screen, they're both familiar. But yeah, I'm curious, but 20 years time now? Oh my God, I will be a lot older. But, you know, if I've got kids by then I'll be like, oh, I remember when I heard about this release of the film, dragging them along. You know, it's going to be interesting to see where the world is at, like, in that time period.
I know.
And
yeah,
how, you know, how culturally this will be received by then. Like, oh, is that an old method? Like, you know, aging people has got better on cinema. Like, it's going to be really interesting to see where it goes, but hopefully he sees it to the end. He said he's going to do it, so hopefully he's going to stick with it.
Yeah, I hope that he's able to finish this and... not hit any bumps. I mean, he obviously hit some bumps with recasting this one role and probably having to reshoot all this stuff. And it's funny too, speaking of being Feldstein, so this was actually the musical that they did in Lady Bird, which had Beanie Feldstein in it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't even think about that. Oh my God. It's so meta already. Oh my God, I love it.
I know.
But yeah, but like Richard Linklater, I think I looked him up and he's 63 as a recording. So he's going to be
Oh,
83 when this comes out.
Rich, my dude. Oh my God.
I
I
mean, maybe his
can't.
daughter could take over. Maybe she could do it. Not saying he's gonna die, not saying he's
No,
gonna die.
I know. You know, he talked about, like, if he had died when making Boyhood, he would have had Ethan Hawke direct the rest of it for him.
That makes sense. That really does make sense. Because I know Ethan Hawke's gone into a bit more of like the writing and the producing side, and he knows the characters, so
He
that
has a
sounds right.
film making around the festival circuit right now that stars his daughter, so very excited about
Yeah.
that. Yeah, I mean, I'll
Amazing.
be there anytime Richard Linklater has a new movie coming out. And it also will be interesting to see how many films he makes in the midst of this, because if you think about all the movies that he made while he was making Boyhood, he made probably like eight movies during that time, including
Yeah.
two before
At
films. So
least.
it's like, I mean, the man
The
doesn't
guy's
seem
a
like
workaholic.
he really is a workaholic. And again, I appreciate that he's someone that does do something different. What is something you want to see Richard Linklater do? I want to see him do a straight up horror film. I think that would be a really cool side of
I
him that
was
we haven't
literally
seen
gonna
before.
say that. I've said this about so many directors. I said that about Wes Anderson. I said he should do a horror. I think Richard Linklater should do a horror as well. Yeah, I think that'd be really interesting. How you do it, I don't know, and still have like a father son, heart to heart in the middle of like, I don't know, like a serial killer chase. I don't know how that's gonna work, but I think with these sort of elevated horrors at the minute, I guess, you could have those deeper meanings. Maybe he could go into that, your Babadooks or something like that that's got a bit more family relations to it. I'd be curious about that.
Yeah, and who would you say is an actor that you really want Richard Linklater to work with? You could pick one guy and one girl. Like, what actors do you really want to see work with Richard Linklater?
I think Barry Keoghan could be pretty good. I think he
Yes.
fits that tone, like, because I think with his Yorgos Lanthimos like films, I think he's got that kind of edge. And then
Absolutely.
for a woman, I'd like to see Saoirse Ronan. I'm a big Saoirse Ronan fan, and I'd like to
Oh,
see her do,
love,
obviously
love.
we mentioned Lady Bird, so I think she could do
Yeah,
it.
that would be, she would be a very good pick to work with Linklater. For me, because she's my favorite actress, I really want Kate Winslet to work with Richard Linklater. I want Richard
Oh
Linklater to have
yeah.
been able to work with both of the Kates. He already worked with Cate
Yeah.
Blanchett. I want to see him work with Kate Winslet. And in terms of guys, I mean, Barry Keoghan is like, that's a really good pick. That's a really, he would definitely fit Richard Linklater's world perfectly, like if he were to do a comedy or a drama or what have you.
Yeah.
But oh, that's tough. I think a good actor for Linklater would, I don't know, I think Adam Driver would be a really good person to work with Linklater. I think if Linklater were to do like a dry comedy or like something serious, because Adam Driver could really do anything. I mean, he's done practically everything so far. Like, he's even done a musical, and I think that
Yeah.
if given the right role, I think Adam could deliver something great when working with Linklater.
I've seen a lot of people compare Before Midnight to Marriage Story, I think, in terms of the dialogue and the sort of dynamics. So he could easily do it, I think.
Absolutely. And to close out our thoughts on Richard Linklater, I know that he may not be regarded as much anymore as one of the best filmmakers working today, but when you sit down and look at the array of work that he has pumped out, I really do think that he is one of the best voices that we have ever received in this industry. I will always get excited whenever Richard Linklater has a new film coming out. I will be there day one anytime he has something coming out. I've been a fan of him for pretty much my whole life, ever since I sat down and saw School of Rock for the first time, and my love for him has definitely increased. We've had some bumps, that's okay, but I still get excited anytime I see a film from Richard Linklater. I love the guy so much. So what are your final thoughts on Richard Linklater, Sarah?
Very much mirroring what you said there, Brian. Like, yeah, since seeing him at 7 years old, you know, seeing School of Rock, I was just captivated, and sort of falling into, you know, the rest of his career as I got older and sort of relating to my life and what I was going through. He has a film for everyone, and I think that's what's magical about it. Like, he just talks to everyone on some level, and I recommend these films to people. Like, oh, you're going through like a breakup, maybe watch this film. Or, you know, you're not sure what to do with your life, check out this film. Like, I just think he's so versatile. He's got real range. Like you said, some of them may not necessarily work, you know, some of those more mainstream ones, but I think he will hold up for years to come with, you know, a lot of his work, especially in the 90s and mid 2000s. I think he's sort of someone that sets himself apart from other directors, you know. What Scorsese does and what Richard Linklater does, very different, but you need that balance, I think, when you watch cinema. And I think he sort of chips away at that kind of underdog story and the kind of small town sort of, you know, losers that everyone sort of loves. And I love that. And I think it's going to prove the test of time, you know, and people are talking about it, obviously, in 20 years' time, because we'll have Merrily We Roll Along. But I think the same conversations will come up. Well, oh, do you remember, you know, Dazed and Confused in 1993, back in the day? Like, yeah, because it still works nowadays. So I just love his depiction of humanity and philosophy. And yeah, I just think he's one of my favorite directors ever, I think.
Well, Sarah, I loved having you on talking about Richard Linklater. So thank you so much for coming on today. It was a real blast having you on.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian. I really enjoyed this sort of transatlantic conversation about a very sort of Texan director.
I know. It was one of my favorite conversations that I've done on this show, really. I really had a great time. And I would love you to tell the listeners where they could find you online. Where could they find your work?
Yeah, so you can find me online mainly under the name Popcorn Chat. So that's Popcorn Chat on YouTube, on Twitter, @SPopcornChat. Instagram, Sarah's Popcorn Chat, and Letterboxd, it's just Popcorn Chat. So if you type in Popcorn Chat on any social media, I'm sure you'll find me talking about films, rambling about my Ethan Hawke obsession.
Amazing. I will put links for that in the description below. And you guys can follow me on all social medias at Brian Suffield. You guys can subscribe to this show on any podcast platform of your choice. We have a Twitter and Instagram, so you guys can stay up to date with what's going on in Film Fragments. Be on the lookout for many great episodes to come. Thank you so much for listening. Let us know your favorite Richard Linklater films. I'm so curious to see where everything ranks for you guys. Let us know. Thank you guys again for listening to this episode. Very much appreciated. And I will see you guys for the very next episode of Film Fragments. Take care, everybody.